Chapter 1. Sometimes you eat the bar, and sometimes, why the bar, he eats you. Living with bipolar disorder. It seems like these days everyone wants to say that they are bipolar, or they love to call other people bipolar when it seems like they're changing up their moods all of a sudden. What these self-deprecating labels and insults have in common is that they both fail to understand that everyone goes from one pole to another in various levels of extremity. That's just the range of human emotions and what we call life. The issue for those of us who suffer from bipolar disorder is that we cycle through these moods largely independent from environmental factors, and we often ride these moods to their extremes of ending up in the hospital on the mania end or unaliving ourselves on the depression side of things. We aren't just moody, and sometimes you might not have a clue as to where we are on the spectrum. Hell, sometimes we don't even have a clue where we are. More on that in Chapter 10. If you picked up this book because you or someone you know suffers from bipolar disorder 1 or 2, congratulations. You're doing more to manage your care or be there for a friend or loved one than many people who suffer from this illness, and I think that's far out, dude. I have been diagnosed on 2 separate occasions with bipolar 1, an illness characterized by very high highs and brutally low lows. They used to call it manic depression, which I liked more, in part because it was at least descriptive. Bipolar tells you nothing about what you experience at those 2 poles of the spectrum, whereas being a manic depressive at least gives you a bit of a preview of what to expect. Sorry, I mean being someone who has manic depression. I mean, sorry, being someone who has bipolar 1. There, that's what my therapist would like for me to tell you. I've gone through quite a few of them in a relatively short period of time. More on that later. But almost all of them have told me that I'm not a bipolar person. I'm someone who suffers from bipolar disorder. It's an illness, they like to say, not who you are. But I don't have any bipolar therapists either. It's hard to explain to someone who doesn't suffer from it just how all-encompassing the illness is and how it feels much more like who you are than it does something you suffer from. I remember one time telling my therapist that I couldn't tell if my indignant reaction to a group of friends of mine was justified or not, or if I was just overreacting, or if it was just because I was manic. Her response kind of shook me. People who suffer from bipolar disorder always have trouble dealing with regular human emotions because your emotions are all over the spectrum so often, and you can never trust yourself to tell for sure which of them are coming from the illness and which of them are just normal human emotions that everyone experiences. Oof. And they wonder why I just cut out the middleman and label myself bipolar. Now, there are a lot of reasons why I would never let my therapist write a foreword to this book, but chief among them is that they know what I actually do in real life. But my hope is not only that you'll take my advice here, but that I'll take my advice as well. If absolutely nothing comes of this book, no one buys it, and it succeeds only in helping me remember what I should do when I'm manic or depressed, it will be very useful. If it helps anyone struggling with how to cope with a mental illness that causes many to go on disability or to roam the streets without a home or even kill themselves, it will have been well worth it. If you buy it, that's just icing on the cake. But going back to the whole bipolar as an identity thing, there's also always been something about wanting to separate the person from the illness that always struck me as a bit ableist. I remember eating lunch with a friend of mine who had a son who suffered from the disease and knew how the disease I suffered from warped my mind. And he was very nice and all, and I learned a lot from him, but I also heard loud and clear, and not just from him, but from every therapist I've ever had and nearly all my non-bipolar friends, that it's definitely an abnormal condition that is not something to be celebrated. It's something to be ashamed of, hidden away, or at most acknowledged as an affliction, but never valued or appreciated. And that's true in spite of the fact that there are tons of famous bipolar people who have shaped our world, both for good and for evil, obviously, but I digress, and had an outsized impact on their time and place. Many of them continue to do so. And whether you want to or not, you will hear from us, and we will change your world. Sometimes we'll make it better, but that's certainly not always the case. And we may need to be dragged kicking and screaming to a care provider when you try to get us the help we need, but we'll probably love you harder than the other people in your lives do too. But man, if you try and fuck us in the ass, or even just step over the line, then we're coming for you, or at least angrily shouting at you to shut the fuck up, Donnie. Just ask fellow bipolar person Buzz Aldrin. He may have been one of only a dozen people ever to see our world from the vantage point of the moon, but you pick a fight with him in a random Hollywood hotel under false pretenses and he'll punch you right in the fucking face. But what would the world be without a single Carrie Fisher movie, or a Selena Gomez song, or a Kurt Vonnegut Jr. novel? It would be a slightly shittier one at the very least. Admittedly, I can do without the politics of fellow bipolars like Winston Churchill or Alexander Hamilton. They weren't exactly occupying various administration buildings in college, and they certainly weren't original authors of the Port Huron Statement. but you can't deny their impact on the world we live in today, even if it wasn't 100% positive. Plus, to many Brits and Broadway fans, Churchill and Hamilton are heroes. Of course, that's just like their opinion, man. But I'm sorry, you are going to get a Mel Gibson or a Kanye every once in a while who just refuse to take their meds. Then again, if Kanye spends more time with his therapist than with Alex Jones, maybe he'll put out another 808s and Heartbreak. But many of us understand the importance of taking our medication in order to provide stability in our lives, and who don't just drink whiskey every morning for breakfast, like a certain former British Prime Minister. Everything in moderation is key, including the unhealthy stuff. Truth be told, I haven't even been living with bipolar disorder for that long. Well, that is to say, I haven't exactly accepted my diagnosis until relatively recently. My initial diagnosis happened way back in 2012, after an incredibly stressful and prolonged work situation, which I believed at the time was the only thing responsible for landing me in the hospital. For weeks, though, I was going on 2 to 3 hours of sleep at best per night, while essentially trying to act as a union rep for a school with no union, and doing all of this as a second-year social studies teacher. The new principal of the school I taught at was, in short, probably a sociopath. Probably the only one I've ever met in real life. And as a person who suffers from another mental illness, I can't hate the guy, but I also recognized that he was willing to destroy the school that my colleagues and I loved and had collectively built into the special thing that it was for the sake of salvaging his own personal reputation. In other words, he had stepped over the line, and that aggression just would not stand, man. So we got rid of him. A dear friend of mine and I helped spearhead the effort to bring forward multiple student and staff complaints to a very selectively hard-of-hearing school board in order to try and ensure the safety of our students and teachers. During that time, however, I slept incredibly little and tried to manage being a second-year teacher who was also running a student-staffed school store and sitting on multiple committees. I don't know when I would have had time to sleep, even if I wasn't also trying to lead a coup d'etat. There was simply no time. One day, though, in addition to the sleepiness, I started imagining things. I wrote strange emails to people because, in hindsight, I was paranoid and delusional, both symptoms of mania for me whenever I become manic, as I now know. Eventually, one night I was sitting at home, completely delusional, and just sort of, you know, getting a bit out there. Not merely out of it, but fully thinking that the FBI and Chinese government were both after me for some reason, and that I was an international spy kind of delusional. That night, my ex-wife and ex-sister-in-law didn't know what was wrong, but they knew I needed sleep, so they gave me a sleeping pill, which I chased down with a beer. Then, instead of going to sleep, I proceeded to stay up and watch TV while they sat on the couch trying to figure out what to do for me. And don't worry, there will be a whole chapter on drugs later on. Shortly thereafter, as I listened to the FBI helicopters surround my house, I was whisked off to a safe house somewhere in the greater Dayton, Ohio area. Well, actually, it was simply decided that I needed to go to the hospital. That FBI stuff, it turns out, was all in my head. As was the radio report I thought I was listening to about our escape on our way to the safe house. I don't know what they told me to get me into the car to go to the hospital, but I do know that on the way there, I thought that the radio was broadcasting the story about our escape from Chinese detention. It was an NPR-style reporter, in case you're wondering how real the hallucinations are, and actively reporting on our journey to the safe house that I was convinced we were traveling to, O.J. Simpson in a white Bronco style. Needless to say, I was confused when we arrived at the hospital. Convinced by my ex and then sister-in-law that I was in need of psychiatric help, I checked myself into the hospital. To this day, I can't remember what my reason was, but I was then put on a hold and shipped off to a psych unit miles away from the hospital where I spent one of the most traumatic weeks of my life. In hindsight, perhaps it was at that point where I put a thankfully clean bedpan on my head for reasons I can no longer remember that finally led them to conclude that a hospital stay was necessary. But who can tell? The problem with being delusional slash psychotic slash having hallucinations is that everything seems so real. To this day, I still can't separate all of the facts from the fictions that my brain made up. What I do remember, however, was desperately trying to get out. I eventually figured out how to get an attorney and fought for my release and won. But it was a bit of a Pyrrhic victory. You see, they had put me on a ton of medications. I'm talking to the point where I was higher than a rocket man throughout the day. But I wanted to get back to work as fast as I could. I was a bit of a hopeless workaholic at that time, which dudeism has saved me from, but more on that later as well. So I told my psychiatrist to get me off all the meds as quickly as possible, which ended up taking months to do safely. I found it somewhat ironic that my psych at the time explained to me that there was a 50-50 chance that I was, in fact, bipolar. Turns out I was so bipolar that even my diagnosis was bipolar. But I led a normal life for another 7 years or so. I quickly got back into teaching and excelled, so much so that I was honored by Ohio's Council for the Social Studies with the Emerging Educator Award, bestowed upon new teachers who show great promise and excel in their field. And later that year, I went on to enroll in a dual master's program for International and Comparative Politics and Public Administration. I only finished one of them, but I did still finish it, and was honored with the Outstanding Student Award presented by the College of Liberal Arts, and the Outstanding Graduate Student Award presented by the graduate school at the university I was attending. I also ran for and won a seat on my hometown's local school board, and then went on to be the vice president of one local nonprofit and the chair of another. I even switched careers entirely, twice, and worked as a community outreach director, and then later became an internationally certified transformative mediator. In short, I did a lot. All of that came crashing down, however, when I was hospitalized for a second time. This time I didn't have all of the stressors in my life to blame for what I had come to describe as a stress-induced episode of psychosis, like I did when I went into the psych ward the first time. Life was pretty good, and my job wasn't really all that stressful, yet my mania still ramped way up, and I stopped sleeping and became extremely paranoid and delusional, all of which went on for a while until I finally checked myself into the hospital once again. But more on all of that later, too. The point is that I could no longer deny that I was, in fact, suffering from some kind of illness. Since then, many of the things in my life that I thought were just character flaws and/or quirks have made much more sense now that I understand them to be symptoms of bipolar 1, and I've gone back and forth from mania to depression more times than I care to count. But at least now I have a diagnosis, more education about my illness, meds, a better support system, and a much better understanding of what works and what doesn't work for me in dealing with it all. And that's what I hope to help you find in this book as well. Being diagnosed as bipolar can be scary, especially when you don't know much about the illness. If you've just received a diagnosis, my goal is to help you understand it more and prepare you for some of the challenges that you're likely to face. I'll point out some of the common pitfalls that I and others have suffered from, while also demonstrating that you can not only survive such a diagnosis, you can actually thrive in it. As a secondary goal, I also hope that this book is helpful for any readers who have friends, family members, or lovers who suffer from bipolar. You're not my primary audience, but I do hope that having a better understanding of the disorder will help you help others in your life who at times may not always be able to help themselves. At the very least, I hope it gives you a bit more patience in your dealings with them. Also, some of my readers may know me from my TikTok channel, where I go by my alter ego, the Gem City Dudist Priest. Dudism is a bit of a joke religion that started as an homage to the movie The Big Lebowski. And while nothing about the religion is serious, it has seriously helped me cope not only with the illness, but with life in general. So you'll have to forgive all of the Big Lebowski references sprinkled in, or in some cases dumped liberally throughout the book. Does the religion help me? Absolutely. Do I want you to become a Dudist? I honestly couldn't care less. And that's sort of the point. Part of the reason I love it so much, particularly as an ex-evangelical, is that I don't have to proselytize, so I truly don't give a fuck whether you join or not. But if you do, welcome to the rug, dude. Oh, and everyone is a dude in dudism. Dudette is just not the preferred nomenclature. Just dude in the parlance of our times, please. But what is dudism, you might ask? Well, it's essentially a religion based on the cult classic Coen Brothers film, The Big Lebowski, and there are hundreds of thousands of adherents all over the world, taken or easy for all us sinners. At its root, the religion is about abiding through all of the strikes and gutters the world throws our way, and learning how to be at peace even when nihilists are trying to steal your joy. Practically, that looks like smoking a lot of weed and drinking a lot of White Russians. But just like all religions, we have our holidays, like Dudesmas and the Day of the Dude, to name just a couple. And say what you will about the tenets of international dudism, at least it's an ethos. Some people like to say that it draws not only from movie quotes, but also from Taoism. I haven't found it to be Taoism exactly, but as religion knockoffs go, I find that it stands up on its own pretty well. With all of that out of the way, let's start with one of the more exciting aspects of having bipolar disorder, experiencing mania. Strippers and blow await you in the next chapter. So if you still prefer to jerk off manually, then grab the lube and let's dive in.